KBTC, a viewer-supported community service of Bates Technical College.
From KBTC Public Television Studios in Tacoma, Washington, it's the Northwest Now podcast. Each week, we take a closer look at the people and issues that affect all of us here in Western Washington. So sit back, relax, and join the conversation with your host, Tom Lason.
Decades of evidence-based science wiped out in a matter of years as the Trump administration works overtime to dismantle the nation's public health infrastructure. Tonight, Washington's Secretary of Health is here to talk about the West Coast Health Alliance and other steps being taken to try to keep actual science in public health, at least locally. Health Secretary Dennis Worsham is next on Northwest Now. Few things have changed the course of human history more than safe and effective vaccines and all the other advances made by the science of public health, which includes things like sanitation, clean water, and a robust program of taxpayer-funded research. But somehow, being anti-science became part of the far right's anti-government, anti-democratic, and anti-social playbook that spread and metastasized into national policy. Standing against the attacks on settled science are the blue states here on the West Coast. Let me be clear, the progressive left by no means holds the keys to effective governance in this country. But on this issue, they're the only group representing the vast majority of Americans who understand and support things like vaccinations. Into this absolute mess walks Washington Secretary of Health Dennis Worsham. Dennis, thanks so much for coming to Northwest Now. Great to have a conversation about the state of the science in public health and also one of the big things that you're tasked with now, which is kind of spreading the message of public health in an era where a lot of the things one would think we took for granted, maybe we don't necessarily anymore. Let's start, though, with a little bio. How do you find yourself in the secretary's role? Talk a little about your history in public health and how you landed here.
Yeah, well, thank you, Tom. It's great to be here with you, and thank you for helping us get our message out about public health. It's a topic, of course, I'm near and dear to my heart. I've been in the governmental public health space in the state of Washington for about 32 years. Grew up in Eastern Washington, a little farming town called Othello, and wasn't sure what I wanted to do when I grew up, and went to school at Eastern Washington University, where I studied in health services administration. And during that time, as I was getting ready to graduate, also came out as a gay man, and we were in the middle of the HIV crisis, and really felt I wanted to do something and give back to the community in which I was coming out. And so during that time, there was a position open over in Snohomish County for an HIV AIDS educator position to really get out and really educate folks and really hopefully interrupt transmission. So I applied, and that's really began my public health career in the 1990s. I've done a variety of things. I've stayed in that space up in Snohomish County for about 12 years and working around the HIV epidemic. At the time, you know, it was such a powerful time. There wasn't medications that were effective at the time, and people were dying pretty rapidly. I often tell the story that we would start every Monday staff meeting reading the names of people who died that week. And, you know, every time we read a name, it just recommitted me and to the mission of public health, which really is about prevention, education, and really getting to longevity and healthy life and well-being. So I became really deeply fascinated and committed to that journey. Stayed there for about 12 years. Ended up down in King County doing a different infectious disease at the time, tuberculosis, which has a totally different population and impacts in those areas. Worked there in infectious diseases for a while, moved into policy work down in King County for a period of time. First policy out the gate was menu labeling. So when you go to Starbucks and see your calorie counts, that was my first policy out the gate. Moved into administration, became a deputy director down there, or a chief of staff role. Came down to the Department of Health for Inslee's first years under Secretary Wiesman as the Deputy Secretary of Health. Went back to King County over infectious diseases. COVID hits. And it was just another crazy time in public health, much like, the first time I went, just a different type of disease, but greater impact in those particular areas. Ended up in the director role in King County through the COVID response. Went back to Snohomish County as a director of their department, and now I've been in the secretary role here for the state of Washington for the last 4 months.
A big part of your job really sounds like you've seen some of these peaks, and they're not positive peaks, but large events in the public health space that constitute crisis. Do you think we're
Yes.
heading, you think we're heading into another one?
Yeah, I do. It's a very different type of crisis, unfortunately, one that's easily preventable, but it's around the political and the divisiveness of ideology and misinformation that's out there around vaccine preventable diseases. We're already seeing, as increases in measles across the United States, and we just think that these things are going to continue and these trends are going to continue here in the state of Washington as well.
Now, you have a measles tracker up on the website, right? I mean, this is something you're actively, kind of like back in the day with AIDS, where you're looking at
Yes.
the data.
Yeah, we are monitoring this thing for a couple of reasons. Measles is one of the most infectious diseases that are out there, highly contagious, and it's really important that we interrupt it quickly, or we'll have a widespread situation for people who are unvaccinated around measles. We have seen that double in the last year here in the state of Washington. Luckily, we've had no deaths. As throughout the country, we've seen huge numbers of measles outbreaks and have seen deaths for the first time in over 10 years. So we're really concerned about this trend, and what's feeding it is the misinformation and the effectiveness of vaccines.
Speaking of misinformation, and I would add parenthetically, we've seen measles outbreaks before in the state of Washington. I remember very specifically 10 years ago going down to Southwest Washington where there was an
Yes.
outbreak out there, and here we are again. In the past few days, CDC updated its website that implies a link between autism and childhood vaccines. That has been completely debunked by actual science over the years. One, is that dangerous? And two, how does it flow? I know you don't run the medical piece of Washington State, but how does it flow into public health into your space?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. That information has been debunked over and over again. And even the people who did the original research on that have come out very strongly and saying there is no direct ties to autism and vaccine. And this misinformation is reckless. It confuses people, it delays action. And it makes kids more vulnerable, in particular in these particular areas. So yes, it is really concerning to us, as you have watched in the media and through social media and a variety of other venues. A number of medical communities, providers, public health, and professionals have come out strongly against these statements and discredit them, including the American Pediatrics of Medicine.
Little devil's advocate question here. Does Secretary Kennedy have any redeeming qualities in terms of maybe thinking a little less dogmatically about the medical system? Who's paying for what? How do we look at, granted, you got to come to the right conclusions, but is there anything that he's talking about where he says, let's be a little skeptical. Let's look for new information. Let's not just, take the company line all the time. I would take vaccines out of that discussion. But over here, does it make any sense?
There are some things that I'm hopeful for. As the saying goes, the devil's in the details. We start with broad statements around health and well-being. He's had an interest in really around chronic conditions and chronic diseases and how do we address those. On the surface, we agree that leading causes of death, like diabetes, heart disease, are things that we should be very concerned about and lean into. We'll see what the policies and the practice, they have not aligned so far to actually align to what the science says or the best approaches. So we're watching, monitoring, and of course, our truth is always on the science side rather than on the rhetoric. So we're open to the conversations. We just got to see where they land.
Let's talk about science for a moment. How is it and why is it, in your estimation, politically speaking, did the right come to a place where science
got thrown out the window to some degree. Science is what brought us the space program and a lot of things I would think the right would be proud of, you know, American progress and capitalism and all those things. But in the health sciences, for some reason, it got singled out and pushed to the side. You've been in this game for so long. Why do you think that is, and why did it resonate?
Yeah, it's a good question. Of course, I'm trying to understand that best myself, because I think that's going to be our best defense in really having the conversations. I do feel where the change happened was during COVID. You know, I have to think in my public health practice, public health was, you know, no matter when the polling happened, was the trusted voice within government around health information. CDC has always been that gold mark of the science and where it's at. I think when COVID happened, we saw some political rhetoric really take place during that time frame. And I do feel that was the change. I think about a time before COVID, you probably heard this term a million times, is we would say, let's use the public health approach. Even people who weren't in public health would say, let's use a public health approach, because it was such a trusted mechanism of doing that work. I think when we got into COVID, there was a lot of misinformation. It became very politicized. It became very economically challenging. And I feel like there was some ideology that stepped into that place. And that's really where the challenge of information and vaccines became a hot topic. And I think, you know, with Kennedy getting promoted and to the platform he is, just took that wave and even rode it further.
And I think there's some anti-government, a little bit of the anti-government piece flowed into that in terms of government control. Hey, we're going to lock you in your house. We're going to force masks. The efficacy of which are questionable. Parental rights. There's a lot wrapped up into this, too. That's part of the problem. It's not just, hey, the science says take a vaccine. It's been a major advancement in the history of humanity. It's like, no, we got some parental rights in here. People, we want to opt out. We want to have some exemptions. What's the status of that in Washington State? And are you sympathetic to that at all? Or is it, listen, folks, here's what the research says. Let's just do it. Where are you on that?
Yeah, you know, it's of course, I'm on the side of the research side and where the science is at. And, you know, let me talk about COVID for just a moment. It's a topic I feel like let's let it go and move forward. But at the same time, it is what, to your point, has shaped some of the mistrust and information of this particular area. You know, our job in public health is really to preserve life. We look at population health, right? It's like when you go to your doctor, you have a conversation with your doctor, we understand what's going on for you, and we make a game plan what's best for you. In public health, we do the same thing around population health. And when you've got an infectious disease that is running wild, where people don't have immunity to that this particular virus that's at play, is then you have to start using non-medical prevention strategies in order to interrupt that until you have pharmaceuticals or things in place to really do that, which gets into some of the more philosophical and things that are more debatable, is like masks and social distancing. When there are no vaccines and when there are those places, you have to use non-medical approaches in order to be able to interrupt that virus. And that's when it gets into a little bit more controversy of where we're at. Now, of course, with the vaccines that we're talking about, like measles, mumps, rubella, and those things, is we do have effective vaccines that work. And we don't have to do those same levels of, you know, non-medical interventions because we have strong science, we have strong medicines that actually work to preserve lives in those areas. So it's a different virus and a different thing that we're working with at this particular time.
When I think about vaccines, you know, President Trump talks about all the vaccines coming out of the same vat and a round of 80 shots for childhood vaccinations, which is just complete bunk. That has no basis in fact whatsoever. With that said, the devil's advocate again. As a parent who raised a couple of kids and everything, you know, the series is 20 to 30 shots in the first 15 months, I think, for kids. It is a lot. It's a lot of shots. Do you recognize that at all? Are you at all sympathetic to that with people, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I am sympathetic, right? It's like who wants a kid that's crying or uncomfortable or not feeling well? I think, you know, one piece that I want to remind people, I just was at a recent meeting on the East Coast, and there was a conversation that really resonated with me with one of our leaders in the public health field, and said, "History is a truth teller." And if you go back and you look at history before we had vaccines, we used to have clinics in place for kids who were blind because of measles.
Oh, yeah.
And we had children die of brain swelling and long-term effects because of vaccines. We had kids with polio who were in braces and had, you know, lived with complications for a period of life. History really is a truth teller in these particular areas. Yes, it's an inconvenience, and yes, it's an uncomfortable period of time to give a number of vaccines, but the alternatives are the diseases are much more severe and can cause death or really some long-time permanent damage. And that's what we're trying to avoid.
So a lot of confusion occurred with what's coming from CDC in terms of recommendations for COVID shots and the childhood vaccine sequence and all the things. Who can keep it straight anymore? Because their advice and their regimen contradicts a lot of what people have become used to. And I think in response to that, we have the West Coast Health Alliance. So talk a
Yes.
little bit about what that alliance is and what problems it's specifically set out to solve.
Yeah, so it's a great question. So let me just a little history here to bring you up to speed on how it came about. During COVID, as you know, during the first Trump administration, there was a rapid movement to get a vaccine out across the line. And Trump warp speed vaccines. We wanted to make sure at the time of not knowing where the science was going to land, is we set up a West Coast practice at that time, is what we call ACIP. It's really the advisory committee around vaccines that the CDC uses. The FDA approves a vaccine. ACIP really does a recommendation of how these vaccines should be used. CDC adopts it, and we get go into place. We decided during COVID time, we wanted to make sure that there was good science coming into the vaccines that were brand new, never been tested before coming into the market, is we wanted to make sure they were good. So a West Coast approach was set up at that time. When we saw Kennedy step into this place, and we started to see ACIP being stood down, this advisory to CDC being stood down and reformulated, and FDA doing something they had never done before. FDA usually says, here's a product, it's a safe product, and then ACIP makes a recommendation. As you remember, around COVID vaccine, FDA came out immediately and said, this is approved for 65 and older. That's generally not an FDA role, that's an ACIP role. And we got concerned about what was the writing was on the wall and where things were going. So we decided that we wanted to revisit having our own West Coast Alliance sharing governance and recommendations that were unified around vaccine delivery. So it started out as vaccine in particular, but we decided to make it more broad and really keep a focus on looking at other things that could come to play, like there are prevention recommendations, like cancer screenings and other things that we're just keeping our eye on to see what's going to happen. But we wanted to have an umbrella that was big enough and to give us an ability to really point to where the science is, like the Academy of Pediatrics and Family Medicine, and really point to them and lift those up as part of the science, working with the medical community and making recommendations that were unified.
So a lot of federal money is coming out of the system for Medicaid, which is AppleCare in Washington State, about
Yes.
$15 billion. You know, eligibility requirements have changed. The feds want you to see a doctor first. How are things different in Washington State as a result of the alliance? And kind of what's the status of accessing a vaccine for
Yeah.
maybe for COVID and some of those things in Washington State as a result of this slight separation we've done in state?
Yeah, great question, Tom. So we are, you know, we had laws on books before, so we were in a good place in the state of Washington. So I serve as the Secretary of Health. Under my leadership, I have what's called a health officer, which we have in our laws the abilities to be able to do actions as a state government under those medical license. One of the things that we did is we put in place what's called a standing order or a prescription that was signed off by a doctor. What happened under the FDA policy, which was so important, was when they made the recommendations for 65 and older, anybody who doesn't meet that requirement becomes off-label. And when it becomes off-label, it takes a prescription if you're under 65 in order to get that vaccine. Well, we know in some of our rural parts of Washington State, over 60% of the vaccines that are given inside of a pharmacy. A pharmacist cannot give an off-label without a prescription in order to give that vaccine. So it was going to really reduce access in parts of Washington for people who wanted a COVID vaccine. So what we did is we wrote a standing order or issued a prescription for anybody to go in and allow that pharmacist to be able to give a vaccine if a person chose that that's what they wanted to do that was under 65 and it was an off-label process. So it's one of our outcomes in assuring access was available to folks in the state of Washington.
Talk a little bit about the childhood vaccination program. If grandparents or parents are watching this, how do they access that? And is there funding still available for that? I think if you're under 19 or 20 years old, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so there are a handful of states that across the United States, it's a program out of CDC. It's called Vaccines for Children. And we have gone a step forward with this, and we have what's called universal access. So any child that is under 19, vaccines are free. And they can go to their medical provider and they can get those vaccines at no cost. If they have insurance, they'll be billed for those insurance. But if they have no insurance, there is no cost for those vaccines. And we have a program that brings those into the state, distributes them throughout our provider community. We have access to all vaccines for kids, and those are available at no cost.
I also read something too, and maybe I misinterpreted, so set me straight. Is the MMR vaccine, which we talked about its efficacy earlier, but is it still available? And is Medicare or Medicaid still paying for that? I heard there was some change in the funding for that, or does that fall into the program you just talked about?
Yeah, so it falls into the program we have. So there's a variety of sources that pay for that, but in the state of Washington, we have universal care. So anybody, regardless of ability to pay, are covered in the state of Washington.
So what keeps you up at night? What are the other things? We've talked a lot about vaccines. Public health, though, gets into so many things, you know, and I'm telling you, but, you know, public, you know, water quality and sanitation, all the things we take for granted in civilization. What other things are out there on your agenda? I realize public health from the medical perspective is number one right now because of what's happening with the feds and CDC. What are some of the other things that are out there on your radar, if anything?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple things that are top of mind to me right now. I'm going to start with one that we have some responsibility within the State Department, Department of Health, and some of those things are shared. So as you know, we have kind of two pillars, of our mission within the Department of Health. We provide the governmental public health space and really access to good public health practice. We also have a role within the healthcare space, and we regulate all hospitals and we provide all licensures for medical professionals. One of the areas when we talk about looking at those hospitals that we regulate is assuring that we have access and affordability in those hospitals. In the recent cuts of Medicaid that you've mentioned, one of our big concerns, we know 250,000 people will be lose their Medicaid coverage, and about another 150 will be priced out of that coverage. And now with some of the other, if these extensions don't happen at the federal government after December 31st, but another 80,000 people will lose that just because of cost in the market share.
Right. You've got the cost piece and also work requirements. Those are the two things that you see as being the impediments to access.
Well, the bigger part will be is that as I've been out in my first 100 days working with the hospitals, we have a number of critical access hospitals. We have some hospitals in our rural community that over 60, 65% of their funding comes from Medicaid. We know that those hospitals are going to be jeopardized in order to stay alive and stay practicing, is if they lose their Medicaid funding or lose insurers, is that is just going to be a hard cost. And we're really concerned that there could be, the average that's been out there in some of the numbers is anywhere from 5 to 14 hospitals could shut down across the state of Washington.
Wow.
And so, that's a real concern for me is part of good health, right, is access to medical care. And I, as I started this segment, is I grew up in a little farming town, Othello. My parents are still there in their mid-80s. That hospital is on that list. If that hospital closed down, the next closest hospital to my parents is an hour away. So you talk about trying to age in place in our communities. Access will really become a major issue with these cuts in the Medicaid cuts that have been passed in H.R. 1.
So, how many hospitals did you say again are in jeopardy in Washington? A good half
There's
dozen.
yeah, there's a there's a there is a range from 5 to 14 that could be impacted by these cuts.
All right, Dennis, thank you. Good stuff, man. Great conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much for the time, Tom. I really appreciate the time with you this morning and be able to get some of these messages out.
I don't have to sit here and argue the truth of the principles of aviation, the benefits of electricity, or the basic structure of the solar system. But for some reason, the medical community seems to have to defend a couple of hundred years of advancements in our now fairly solid understandings of human health. The bottom line, science is never perfect. It evolves like civilization is supposed to. Might there someday be something better than vaccines? Sure. But with that said, what you hear coming from the Trump administration on public health is in complete contradiction to what the evidence tells us when it comes to things like vaccinations.